Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown, covering episode 206 from April 21st, 1997. I'm Kenny McIntosh. I apologise for the lateness of this episode. The preparations for the Wade Barrett tour have been immense, so Sandra and I have just not been able to get together to record it, but I'm here with Sandra as always. Hi Sandra.
Hi Kenny.
So I am very happy to be talking about this episode of Raw because this was, oh good God, was this an eventful episode of Raw.
It sure was. I mean, that Ahmed Johnson versus the Sultan match nearly just blew me away. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Oh, of course. I'm not talking about any of the other exciting things that happened in this show. I remember at one point, there's like the initial street fight thing that happens. I'm just kind of watching it. And then, like, you know, the hour two pyro goes, and I was like, we're only halfway through?
Like, we were not actually halfway through when the pyro hit, because the pyro and the intro two was only 38 minutes into the show, which I always think is unfair, right? Like, it's not an even half. This is something that they do. Every once in a while, the pyro will be, like, at 50-some minutes, and it's like, oh, good, I only have, like, 30-some left. That's awesome. But when it hits and it's only 38 minutes into the show, then it's like, oh, I have 51 minutes left. Thankfully, this episode was good. I'm just saying.
But the funny is, it's funny, like, well, yeah, in the South Africa episode, you want to kill yourself.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about the show. So it's the night after Revenge of the Taker. By the way, you can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes and listen to our full review of Revenge of the Taker in your house, where we have, it's basically a two-match show, I think. We could probably agree on, like, we liked it to varying degrees, but really Undertaker Mankind and Bret Hart Steve Austin are the only sort of noteworthy things on the show.
Yeah, they really are. And really only Bret Hart Steve Austin is, like, that good.
Yeah, I mean, Undertaker Mankind have had so many matches. It's definitely not their worst match. They've had worse. But, yeah, the undercard was pretty dire. We did have the debut of Rockabilly. So there was that for Sandra to just kind of question why we built to this.
I'm still questioning it. I'm still questioning how it makes sense. And as we will find out, it's not really explained.
No, it's not.
Not at all.
So the thing to bear in mind here is that going into this show, Bret Hart was injured. And Bret Hart, the initial plans for Bret Hart, and I can talk to Sandra about this because Sandra has already seen the one thing that would have that happens on next week's show that basically affects this. Bret was expected to come back. He was pulled from the In Your House in May, on May 11th, and the plan was for him to come back.
May the 11th, a cold day in hell.
Exactly.
These In Your House names are just cracking me up, by the way. Go on.
But at least, you know, it's funny, like, I think it's on next week's episode, because I've watched both, but we don't have time right now to record both. So, like, but on next week's show, like, I think Austin does a promo that, like, or is it on this? No, is it this week or next week where Austin does a promo where he mentions it'll be a cold day in hell for The Undertaker?
Good question, because I watched them straight back to back.
It's next week's episode.
It was this, but one, like, in the interview that he starts out, he goes, if I'm going straight to hell, damn sure you're coming with me. Austin gave two interviews on this episode that we're discussing. So did he say cold day in hell? I cannot.
Well, on one of the, I think it's next week's one, but he does say, but it's funny, like, it naturally takes place. Like, you know, now we're in an era where, like, words happen and they say something like three times and you go, oh no, this is a thing now. Like,
there will, you know, be no mercy for you at, yeah, No Mercy.
Whereas, Steve Austin says Cold Day in Hell, and it's not the name of the pay-per-view yet. We only know that because we know that's what the name of the pay-per-view is going to be. But he just sort of says a line, and that becomes the line of the pay-per-view. And it doesn't feel like he's forcing it as it does at certain other points. But I mean, I still think Revenge of the Taker is probably one of the stupidest ones.
Revenge of the Taker was a very stupid name. I mean, I guess, did they name it Revenge of the Taker before his face got burnt?
No. Basically, what they would do is they would have these in your houses, and then a couple of weeks before, they would name it something to fit in with storylines.
Right.
But the original plan for Bret Hart was Bret Hart was going to return at the King of the Ring on June 8th, where he was originally going to face Rocky Maivia and win the Intercontinental Championship.
Oh, Bret Hart was going to win the Intercontinental Championship?
Yes.
Interesting.
And the plan was also for The Undertaker to headline that show against Ahmed Johnson.
Really?
Now, neither of these matches happen at King of the Ring.
The Undertaker versus Ahmed Johnson, you say? I sort of want now, to see
you,
that.
When you think about it, it kind of makes sense because like Ahmed Johnson's this big baby face. He's kind of, you know, he's trying to beat the nation. So once that's done,
him he's and a one man gang, Kenny.
Wait, unfortunately, not the
one man gang, just one of them.
But you know, like I think it's interesting that like Rocky Maivia, Bret Hart for the IC title, and Undertaker Ahmed Johnson for the WWF title is kind of an interesting show. And it's funny because obviously you look back at Bret Hart now and you know everything that happens, and you're like, I can't really imagine Bret Hart becoming Intercontinental Champion in 1997.
Yeah, but I really can't. That would have changed so many things. Can you even imagine?
I know. So like, but Bret knew going into the match at Revenge of the Taker that he was injured, but he decided to, he wanted to work the next night to kind of, you know, finish the angle with Steve Austin, or kind of finish that part of the angle to move on, because he didn't want to muck up, because you can see in this episode that Bret Hart's so entrenched in the Hart Foundation storyline that it wouldn't really work without him.
So you mean he didn't instead want to just come out and give a tearful promo about how his career might be done because his knee hurt and then air in memoriam videos for weeks on end? Bret Hart didn't choose to do that instead?
He did not.
Amazing.
So there was that. And
I'm rolling my eyes so hard right now.
I fully expect that you should be. It's Shawn Michaels and his injuries. I forget, it's funny, like as I'm watching these back, like I have a vague recollection of a lot of stuff. Like, but we're still watching Raws now that I've not fully seen before. Like, the first Raws that I've seen in full are like from June onwards.
Okay. Because I know you tell me this all the time, but did they just air shortened versions of them? Was it basically like the Hulu edit? But on
No. It was just I didn't have Sky TV at this point.
Oh, right. That's right.
So like, but I would get one of my friends to tape. Now, Jamie Miller, who was my sort of wrestling friend at the time, he's going to remember the real details and correct me the next time I see him in person. But from my recollection, I would get Livewire taped for me, so I would watch Livewire and I would see like most of the angles, but I wouldn't see the full show. And okay, like Jamie would have Sky, and sometimes I would get to see full Raws, but like not all the time. So like there's an angle on this show with Marlena and Goldust I didn't even know ever happened. So I was like popping like a motherfucker because I didn't even know that it had been.
See, it's interesting because I remember you saying to me like, yeah, China never gets any comeuppance because no one can touch China. And I like, that's one of the most exciting parts of Retro Raw for me right now, actually, is the China Marlena stuff. We'll get to it later in the episode, but I'm finding that actually really intriguing. I love that dynamic.
And I actually think that what they were going for, after Revenge of the Taker, and again, it's like it's difficult because we don't want to talk about next week's episode yet, but we have watched it, as I feel like the build for Cold Day in Hell is already so much more interesting for most of the matches.
Oh my gosh, yes. Like, I actually remember that there's a pay-per-view coming, because before Revenge of the Taker, it seems like they forgot that there was a pay-per-view coming half the time.
Well, and they had to change things, obviously, because it was going to be Sid and Bret, and then it was Austin and Bret, it was going to be Undertaker and Vader, and it was Undertaker and Man. So the two top matches they had to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that, but like, you know, the original plan for...
Even so, don't you think they should have used the go-home show to really, like, hammer home what they're doing instead of that abomination that we had to watch from South Africa / Kuwait / Muncie, Indiana? Ugh, I'm still not over it. Well, I don't forgive
now,
them.
Also, the original plan on this show, on April 21st, according to Dave Meltzer and The Observer, was that Sid was due to return on this show.
Oh, but he wasn't. Sid. Where is he?
He wasn't there. He apparently wasn't there because there was so much happening on the show that they felt he would have been lost in the shuffle. But he was scheduled
to... How could you ever lose Psycho Sid in the shuffle?
I don't... He was then supposed to return on the 28th of April episode of Raw. Which he does not, just to clarify. And the original plan was that Cold Day in Hell was going to be built to Sid versus Mankind.
Really?
So we're, it's interesting now because obviously I remember Sid being like to WrestleMania pretty much, and then back in like June. That was my vague recollection of him. But now it's funny, like, you know, reading a lot more about the weeks that go by, and it's like, well, we're now going to be looking at two pay-per-views where he would have had a semi-headline match. So it's kind of becoming apparent why he does not last that much longer, because they keep investing a lot of time in him or wanting to put him in big spots, and he's not there.
And he doesn't show up and only bothers to leave a voicemail on the weekend or something. Isn't that what you said on...
Yep.
Did we talk about that on the South Africa episode or Revenge of the Taker?
We did.
Everything's blending together right now.
It was one of them. So
I'm just trying to remember what we've talked about here on, you know, the free feed, so that if something happened on Revenge of the Taker...
Basically, what you should do is just go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, subscribe, and
listen to... $5 and listen to Revenge of the Taker.
But you know, it's interesting because people have tweeted me quite a fair bit in the last couple of weeks actually saying that they are really shocked at how much content we actually put out on Patreon. And I've looked recently at some other Patreons and I'm like, we really do put out a lot more than most people. But to me, it's like we shouldn't be putting out any less than we do.
No, I mean, I think it's good. Money. Well, you have to put out for the people. I mean, come on now. But
I know that's your motto. So
if they pay us money, you got to put out. But that no, it's true.
So
I mean,
Sandra will put out for the people as long as they give her money.
Well, I mean, I'm not Sunny, but whatever. But no, you're right. I mean, I've looked at other... I think I alerted you to this, actually. I mean, there are some Patreons that put out something. And I'm not going to, you know, name and shame anyone. And
name!
No,
name!
I'm not going to. But there are some Patreons that put out, like, maybe one thing a month. And they charge, like, $8 for one thing a month. And there are a couple that I subscribe to that just don't put out that much content. So I'm kind of proud of the level of content we're able to put out. And that we have multiple tiers for people, like if you just want to hear interviews and if you just want to hear, you know, takeover reactions and stuff, you can do the $3 level. I don't know. I'm not going to plug Patreon anymore. You guys don't want to hear it, but I think our Patreon's
pretty good. We also have, you know, pretty much almost a 15% conversion rate on you guys who listen to this that have subscribed to Patreon, which sounds low, but that's actually a really high number of people. So thank you to everyone who has. And if you haven't, we still love you just as much.
It's true. We love you for listening.
But I do just want to make some people aware, because it has been a question that's come up, is that if you've been thinking about it, like, you know, should I go to Patreon or not? You can choose at any time to, like, you know, if you're having like a good month and you're like, I'm going to pledge $7 this month to listen to everything. You can choose the next month to go down to $1 if you're a bit skint, and then go back up to $7 the next month. You can change every month to another amount. So don't feel that you have to come in at one amount and stay at that amount. It's fully flexible for you guys. And we've got loads of really patient listeners who are waiting on us doing our $50 specials. I know that I think it was Jamie Gray had messaged us recently about a women's wrestling one, or Ben Williams.
It was Ben. Jamie Gray requested Lucha Underground like back a long time ago, and we really need Jamie to get Gray, on that for Jamie. He's been very patient.
I need to watch some Lucha Underground. It's actually Sandra's fault, Jamie, because
it is actually Sandra my fault because I'm Sandra supposed to give him homework.
Sandra was supposed to give me some stuff to watch, and she hasn't. So until she does, you know, I would get onto her. But David and I are recording One Night Stand for Lucy this week. David and I are also going to get together for Ella and record the fan fiction thing this week.
I'm so excited to hear what that turns into.
I don't even know what it's going to turn into. And then for Ben, we're going to do his one. But we're trying to get all that together as well. And then the final thing I'll say on Patreon, because I know I'm just giving a mad plug, but we don't plug it that often, so I feel it's okay.
True.
You can download a Patreon app on your phone where you can just download the content when you're at home on Wi-Fi. And then there's like a audio downloads page where all your downloads are there, so you just listen to them on the go. So it's not like you have to, it's not like old ITR VIP where you had to log into some weird fucking website and your username was like ZTYTO5454 that you can't remember.
I actually remember mine. How weird is that? It was like PP star puck do or something. It was ridiculous.
It's so odd that we only had like 70 subscribers to that. To be fair, God bless them. I wouldn't have subscribed. So
at least you're honest. Our Patreon's way better than the old ITR VIP.
Yeah, I am proud of the Patreon, to be fair. I think it is decent, and I'm glad that we do it. Actually, very quickly, I am in the process of organizing an interview with Justin Roberts.
Oh, really? That'll be fun.
We'll be doing very soon, so that'll be on Patreon, and you know we're going to get into some JBL chat on that, so just be prepared. Anyway, so the show opens up with Steve Austin doing a promo with Vince McMahon. It's funny to me because Austin gets in the ring and he very early in the promo threatens to beat up Vince. And Vince kind of like half smiles and then kind of realizes that Austin might be serious and stops smiling. And I thought it was just a really fun, interesting exchange when you see, because we're watching it knowing how things turn out.
It's fascinating watching him interact with Vince, knowing where it goes. Like, really fascinating, because he does. He gets right in Vince's face. And, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin, I mean, he's very spitty also, as he talks about, you know, how he put Bret Hart in the sharpshooter. And, you know, he's talking about the street fight. He's like, I don't want to wrestle you, Bret. But, I mean, he gets right in Vince McMahon's face, basically, like, I don't know, continuing to be Steve Austin, saying that, I forget what he was even saying to Vince McMahon. I don't think he was talking about how Vince has screwed him here. Was he? I don't even remember, but just...
Mm-hmm. I don't think he was. So Austin comes out, and what's really fascinating about Austin is he's got a title shot. You know, Vince McMahon says, you know, you've got a title shot, cold day in your house against The Undertaker.
Because was their match at... Revenge of the Taker, was that for a title shot? Did they ever make that clear? Because I don't even remember that. I remember the one right before. I remember their other match was for a title shot when Bret Hart.
It wasn't officially for a title shot, but it's just kind of, this is what's come out of it, which is cool, you know, because sometimes it's nice to not just be spoon fed exactly what it is. So Austin's got this title shot, which should make him on top of the world, you know.
Oh, he should be way more excited about it than he is, but he's still really pissed about Bret Hart.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. He doesn't care, and it's an obsession with Bret. And I think that some of the best people that fans can get behind is people who are flawed and who you can relate to, because, like, who relates to, like... One of the things about John Cena that I found very difficult to relate to is I think as a character he was very unrelatable, because he was just happy all the time,
and then nothing seemed to affect him.
Nothing affected him. You know, even when he joined the Nexus, he still wore his full purple gear. You know, like, nothing affected him. Whereas, like, Steve Austin's so angry here, and so then he calls Bret out, and it's really funny because for whatever reason, like, Austin's like, you've got 60 seconds to get out here. And then they put a timer on the Titantron for him.
And then the crowd's counting down. They're like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And Bret doesn't show up because, of course, he doesn't, right? So he doesn't come out. And then he's like, well, then I'm going to go to the back and go get you, Bret. And then Bret shows up on the Tron to call Austin a low-down, dirty, stinking hyena. Because apparently Americans are hyenas now, in Bret's mind. He says this multiple times. I think on the next episode he goes more into the hyena thing. But that's his latest insult to Americans, is that we're hyenas.
First of all, and I'm fully comfortable here to make this comment. You know, we're all metrosexual males now. We can make these comments.
Yes, Bret I'm Hart definitely a metrosexual male. That's how I identify.
You are. Bret Hart looks fantastic here.
Oh, he, like, looks great.
Sometimes I look at Bret Hart in these episodes and go, oh, it's so unfair what happened to him. Like, it's just so unfair. Because he's just like, he's 40 years old here. Mm-hmm. 40. Anyway, so... Bret is, I'm just baffled by how he turned out.
A stroke did not help.
It didn't. Well, the kick to the head did not help, which led to the stroke, which led to, you know, many things. But Bret's on screen and he's talking down Americans the whole time. It was a very smart promo because, like you said before, you know, Austin's not your typical babyface and he's not showing babyface traits. So when Bret Hart comes on screen and they're still trying to kind of navigate this line of where he is and how the fans react to him, but he's got to kind of hammer home how much he hates Americans because they're in America, so they want him to be booed. And, you know, he talks about, like, I've got my notes here. He says that Americans cheer people like Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin. And I wrote, I have no defense on Shawn. Sorry, Bret. Like, because I don't know. I can't defend it.
I can't defend it at all. No, nothing Brett is saying is untrue. That's the thing. Like, if you're cheering people like... And to be fair, though, are all the Americans really cheering Shawn Michaels? Because I'm going to go with not so much. Like, I don't know if that's actually true. So I will find some fault with Bret Hart there, because I just don't think that all of America is cheering Shawn Michaels. But I understand his point, right? Like, if you're cheering dickheads like Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin, who Steve Austin is still an absolute dickhead too. Don't get me wrong. I maintain Steve Austin is not a babyface here. He's not a traditional babyface in any sense of the word. But, and I can see where Bret Hart, the character, right? Like, Bret Hart, who left the WWF, who had to come back, who was promised title shots, who wanted, Bret Hart actually sort of wanted to do what the Sultan claims to want to do, is, you know, restore morality to the WWF. Maybe Bret Hart and the Sultan need to have a conference, but Bret Hart actually wants to be a role model for people. He wants to be the champion, and he wants to be a role model for kids. And he's like, Shawn Michaels, you're not a role model. You're posing in Playgirl. And he's always had a problem with that. So there's character consistency there too. He's like, if you're cheering for someone as depraved as Shawn Michaels, or as, you know, asinine as Stone Cold Steve Austin, then you Americans are just a bunch of low down, dirty, stinking hyenas. And I'm not sure why we're hyenas exactly, but I guess because we like violence and picking the bones clean, and we like blood and guts and all that kind of stuff. But then Steve Austin says to Bret Hart, if I'm going straight to hell, damn sure you're coming with me.
The thing with Steve Austin and Bret Hart in itself could be a 2-hour conversation.
Yes.
Like, just, but that's why the minutiae of this feud is something that I love. And I think you will, by the end of it, love as well.
No, like, I love it already. Like,
and like, I can't wait till we get to a point where like, we can just have we are going to do this. I'm just going to rope you into this. We need to have a podcast about the Steve Austin Bret Hart feud.
Okay.
Like, when it's over, because there's so many interesting parts to it. And, but I think that it was clever here of them to make sure that Brett got over, you know, that he thinks that Americans are stinking hyenas and all that sort of stuff, because he has to make sure that Americans dislike him. But my favorite thing is, so they do this thing, and, you know, you're like, okay, there's a street fight later on tonight. Bret Hart's accepted it. He's going to have the match, that street fight.
Well, because he's waiting for Brett to come out, so then he goes to the back to look for Brett, right? Is that what happens now, or is that...
Well, no, but first, I want to just clarify, because I watched Raw in 2017, and I'm going to rope SmackDown in this a little bit as well. Here is how you promote a Raw, right? So what they had was four things in a 30-second period that would make me just be like, I am not going anywhere. This is what they hyped in 30 seconds. Ken Shamrock is going to challenge Mike Tyson. Vader is in jail in Kuwait. Steve Austin is trying to find Bret Hart with a steel chair. And Undertaker is facing Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I'm in. I'm in for this show. Like, you've hooked me. Where else would I go? You know? And I'm just like, I think that's something they used to do that I miss, is that they would try and hype you in with these different things. And it, you know, like nowadays, and I don't want to bash nowadays all the time. I don't want to seem like I'm just like, but 1997 was better. It's not that. It's just that I feel like when I watch this, there's like more inventive ways to do storylines that they do, or like they're more open in how they do things. It doesn't feel as sort of like, even from the opening of the show, like,
I
even
think it
the show
feel as segmented as nowadays.
Yes, that's the word.
Because everything feels kind of layered together. And I think we'll get into that more in the next episode, even. Like,
yeah, 100%.
The one after but even this. I kind of hate that we've watched both of them, because I'm running them together in my head and trying to remember what happened on which one. But even here, it does feel pretty layered, because, you know, you have the Bret Hart Steve Austin thing, but you're mentioning Shawn Michaels still, but Steve Austin's going to face The Undertaker. So there are just all these things at play in the main event scene. And all these different stories are kind of folding into one thing, feeling like what's my favorite thing in the world, a fully formed world where the characters interact and all have very clear motivations and, you know, hate each other. And they might not really like the person they're helping, but the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of a deal. And it feels a lot more organic. And it feels like just some of the chaos and the brawling that happens feels like what would happen if you got all of these explosive personalities together in a ring facing off, and, you know, all in one environment where you might as well just be like, okay, let's see what happens, because chaos.
And I think that's one of the things that's so interesting about it, is even at the opening part of the show, when they're panning around the crowd And it's like the crowd feels so much more part of the show, but not in the way that it, now fans are part of the show. Like, you know, sometimes they go, oh, you know, this crowd, they're just, you know, like the crowd now sometimes, I don't mean this as everybody that goes to wrestling because it's not the case, but like it feels like everybody at the show at the start of the show cannot contain their excitement that they're at this show.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they're about to fall over the barrier because they're so involved. And I miss that about it. And I think that's what I enjoy watching these shows, is that it feels like you don't watch these shows thinking there's, you know, a load of political pushes going on or people are being shoved down your throat as much for the most part. There are exceptions, Shawn Michaels. But
do you think, like, that's because of the product, though, or do you think that's just because the fans have more access to backstage information now, so they feel a lot more entitled and feel like they know everything? Because, I mean, like, one person says something mean to someone else backstage and it's all over the internet. So I don't think it's necessarily because of the product they're presenting. I think some of it is just, it's different times.
Well, I think you still had, you know, the internet by 97 was enough that there were wrestling news sites. Like, because when you look at, like, the signs in the crowd, there are smart fans in the crowd.
Yeah.
And there are a fair few, you know, I think it's this episode where when Austin comes out, there's an AWO, Austin World Order sign. Or, like, there's one guy in the hard cam at one point that walks past with a Nitro is better thing. Mm-hmm. But I just think that what they do here that I don't think they do now is that they've really given a lot of control to the fans now of, you know, how you feel about everything.
Well, and I feel like fans feel like the wrestlers themselves are more accessible to them because of things like Facebook and Twitter. Like, you can actually tweet the wrestlers. Back in 1997, yeah, you could call the superstar line and press option 6 to find out whatever bullshit they were talking about that day, right?
But I would see if you gave me a retro, I would phone that today if I could hear what they were saying in the 1997 Superstar, because I bet you there's some fucking gold on those.
There's one on the next episode that I would absolutely want to call in, and it would be ridiculous.
But, like, yeah, no, I think, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Social media is one of the big things as well, because,
and I don't want to say that that's bad, because I think that actually helps fans connect with the wrestlers in some ways. Like, there are some people I don't think would mean as much to the fans. I don't think Daniel Bryan would have meant as much to the fans without social media and without everyone kind of bonding together behind someone like Daniel Bryan. I don't think that would have necessarily been possible without the internet. So I don't want to say that it's better or worse. I think it's just different. I think it's just different times.
But also, I don't think Daniel Bryan would have worked if the company were giving the audience what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Because Daniel Bryan was a product of that. And it's like, you know, we're watching this show, and even though it's not for the right reason, or it's not for, like, Steve Austin feels organically like he's becoming more a part of the show. And it's not, and it's like, it feels right that he has become as big a part of the show as he is.
Steve Austin's rise is reminding me a lot of Daniel Bryan's rise in some ways.
Yeah. And I think that,
and people made those comparisons when Daniel Bryan was on his way up and when everyone was getting behind Daniel Bryan, because he was never supposed to be the guy, but it turned out that, you know, everyone wanted him to be the guy. And that's, I guess it's just kind of confirming watching Retro Raw right now that, yeah, that's kind of how Steve Austin feels right now too, because Steve Austin wasn't getting title shots and Steve Austin wasn't the world champion, and Steve Austin, you know, I know some things that are going to come. I know which championship he wins next, under unfortunate circumstances, but.
No, you don't.
Sure. Maybe I don't.
Well, no, you know a big moment in his career where he wins the championship. It's not his next one.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know some things that happen, right? I don't know everything that happens. But the point of it
all... But that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, but that's a good thing. And also, I mean, the point of it is that, you know, he wasn't the guy. Even when we started watching Retro Raw, like, he seemed like he was on the way up, and he seemed like he was fighting and scratching and clawing for airtime. And every time he's on screen, and in this first promo that he gave with Vince McMahon, it still feels like he is putting himself completely out there and amping everything up so that he's like, no, every moment that I'm on screen, you are going to remember fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin. You are not going to forget me, because I am putting all of myself into this and I'm working as hard as I can.
I concur with that assessment. Up next, we had Ahmed Johnson versus the Sultan.
I love this.
This was as bonkers as you can imagine. These are just two people who should not be wrestling. They should be in musical theater, just because they're just bonkers. Yeah.
I'm not sure who's more eloquent, Ahmed Johnson or the Sultan who lacks a tongue and doesn't speak.
But
I Ahmed love Johnson them both so much.
They are great. Ahmed Johnson seems to have things in control, though. He seems to be on his way to a victory when the entire Nation of Domination, like every single person from the admin team to the head honchos, they come out to distract Ahmed Johnson, and he does leave the ring to go and sort of confront them. But then the Sultan ends up hitting him, hitting Ahmed Johnson, and he makes the best facial expressions when he gets hit.
It's great.
Because he all of a sudden looks like a drunk fish.
Yeah, he really does. That's great. Absolutely the best way to describe it.
And he just
does look like a drunk fish. But wait, Kenny, his 2x4 was under the ring.
Like, I feel like I need to say it now. It's been enough weeks. Has Ahmed Johnson got, like, copyright law from Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Because he uses a 2x4 a lot.
He uses the 2x4 a lot. I mean, I want to see a moment where Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Ahmed Johnson face off and discuss the use of their 2x4s.
There's a table for 3 episodes.
Seriously, book it.
Although,
now.
To be fair, Ahmed and Hacksaw together would just be a table of 3 because Ahmed does take up 2 people. Now.
True. Very true. Can you imagine if Ahmed Johnson would have been on Legends House? That show might have been worth watching.
Oh my god, that'd be so good.
It would be so good.
I would love it so much. But yes, Ahmed ends up getting the 2x4, and then, like, you know, the Nation just fuck off. They're like, nope, Ahmed joins my 2x4.
I love how the entire nation just backs away because Ahmed Johnson has this 2x4, right? Like, and they could absolutely, because they've done it before. Like, they've taken Ahmed Johnson. They could just take the 2x4 from Ahmed Johnson, but they're like, no, he's too mental. I don't want to mess with him right now. So instead, he just beats up the Sultan. He did. Because baby faces, I don't know.
The Sultan attacked him from behind, on the outside.
Yes, he hit him once from behind, so he definitely deserves to get the shit beaten out of him with a 2x4.
First of all, I love that the Nation of Domination thing makes sense on so many levels, because even in real life, you'd be like, am I fuck letting Ahmed Johnson hit me with a fucking 2x4?
Right.
Fuck off. But also, I love that when he's battering the Sultan, Iron Sheik does nothing.
Nope. Nothing whatsoever. Not where even is Bob Backlund? Was he there?
Vacation? I don't know.
Can we talk a little bit about what Vince says about Ahmed Johnson going to South Africa? Do you remember this?
I don't.
Okay. So I wrote this down.
Right.
Ahmed Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, just last week from South Africa, returning to his fatherland. And I must say, I don't think any one individual has ever done what Ahmed Johnson did in South Africa last week when he galvanized an entire nation, something Nelson Mandela even has not been able to do. I mean, when you saw who was in that audience, JR, you were there, you saw the acceptance, the adulation. He goes on a bit, and then JR's like, yeah, Ahmed Johnson is revered no matter the color of your skin. What?
Jesus Christ.
I mean, what?
Can you imagine explaining Vince to a non-wrestling fan?
I can't. I mean, it's hard enough when, you know, like, I tell people, like, my father, who knows nothing about wrestling, right? Like, I tell him, oh, yes, I'm going back to the UK this summer, and da-da-da-da, and he was asking me about WrestleMania. And he was like, so was this like your trip to the UK last summer when you were doing that thing? And I was like, no, it was different. I was going to shows at WrestleMania. And he's like, so what were you doing for a whole week? And I'm like, going to shows because there's a lot of wrestling. I don't really understand it. I mean, my father one time asked me, you know, that guy who runs WWE? And I was like, Vince McMahon? He goes, yeah, him. So, yeah, no, I can't explain Vince McMahon to people like my father who don't know who he is. But the fact that Vince McMahon is apparently saying that Ahmed Johnson has done a better job of bringing South Africa together than even Nelson Mandela, because Ahmed Johnson...
To be fair, do we have any evidence against this?
Well, I suppose
Do we really know
not.
What Ahmed Johnson's efforts were like on the ground when he was there?
I mean, no. But maybe getting an entire arena to cheer for you is not quite the same as trying to unite a nation during apartheid times. I mean, I'm just saying. Listen, Vince McMahon's worldview is incredibly, incredibly interesting.
I love it so much.
It's just baffling.
I think my... Well, I know it. Like, it's legitimate. Like, I'm not even lying. My world and my life would be a less full place without Vince McMahon.
No, it's true.
It's the same for all of us, whether we want to admit it or not.
Vince McMahon is the reason we're doing this podcast. It's the reason we're friends, Kenny. Yeah. But he is a baffling individual.
And I love it, every part. I love how baffling he is. And he only gets worse. They do a great segment backstage where Austin is literally trying to break down Bret Hart's door with a steel chair. And then we cut to the other side where you see Bret in his dressing room with like Dave Hepner, Pat Patterson, and Blackjack Lanza, who are all trying to stop him coming in. And Bret's like being such a dick, and he's like, tell him to wait in the ring. I'll be out later when I'm ready.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'll get him what he deserves when I'm ready. And you see the door, being hit from the other side.
And you see Patterson just going, he'll get you in the ring. Stop it. Mm-hmm. Pat Patterson trying to calm it down. But then comes my favorite segment of the whole show. And this was, I really enjoyed this show, but this segment... I could rewatch this about 17 times and still love it. So Vince, JR, and Lawler are on commentary, and they are, recapping that Austin and Bret are having a street fight and da-da-da. And so they talk about the fact that Vader's in jail, and they have
I just love the comedy, graphic with the bars.
Comedy bars over his face with a sound effect. Yeah, day 9. And they're like,
day 9 of Vader being held hostage in Kuwait.
Now, they show you, so obviously it's like, Vader, he's legit in jail. This is not a lie.
No, this is a real thing.
And they talk about it. They talk about, he's facing, he's going to face Shamrock on May 11th, but he's in jail. And, on Wednesday we find out in court what's going to happen, and that's the outcome of the case. So then Jerry Lawler brings out a drawing that he has made, which is a very good drawing, to be fair.
Jerry Lawler is a very good artist.
And he Cretin does this
of a human, but a very good artist.
that's his tombstone. So it's like a picture of Vader, and like Lawler's talking about how like in Kuwait they don't go to jail, they do like community service where they pick up camel shit, if that's even a thing. Which I'm not too sure that's how Kuwait jail works.
I'm going to go with probably no.
But then he brings out an action figure.
That he's drawn bars on.
That he's drawn black bars on. But the best thing is, so Vince McMahon runs this show. He has been fine with the idea that comedy bars go over the face of Vader, a man who is legitimately in jail.
Yep.
He lets one of his on-screen commentators do a drawing with camel shit. But then Jerry Lawler brings out an action figure with black Sharpie pen. No, that is too far, Jerry Lawler. Right. That's when Vince chooses to get outraged. What?
Baffling. Oh. Absolutely baffling. Can we just talk about the footage of the announcer asking him if wrestling was fake, and then Vader, because the whole reason he's in jail, right, is because an announcer...
I'm just gonna ask you this.
What?
This is legit. So he was on a TV show, and the announcer asks if wrestling's fake, and he reacts the way he reacts. Had you ever seen this footage before?
I have heard this footage before. I had never seen this footage before.
Talk me through your thoughts.
Okay, so you have this announcer on this talk show in Kuwait. It's basically the equivalent of Good Morning Kuwait or something. I don't know. We have Good Morning America. It seemed like that kind of talk show, right? Where you just you have celebrities on and they're just shooting.
It literally is called Good Morning Kuwait.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that. That's funny. But so I guess the announcer asked him if wrestling is fake. I don't think they even showed the announcer asking the question, but Vader is incensed and in character, right? He's incensed by the question, is wrestling fake? Because wrestlers, of course, are trained to basically kick the shit out of people who ask them if wrestling's fake, to show them that wrestling is indeed not fake. Vader's trying to protect the business here. Now, my favorite thing about this clip is that as Vader's getting all like angry and he like goes up to the announcer, he grabs him by the scruff of the neck, he grabs him by the tie and is like, does this feel fake to you? Does this feel fake to you? And he's like getting all up in his face, and the announcer handles it pretty well on air. But I think the announcer was legit very upset by this, and that's why Vader got put in jail, right? The announcer pressed charges. Am I correct in the story?
Yep.
Okay.
Vader did later on, just to clarify, in an interview he did with PW Mania in 2014, this is what he said about the incident. He said, I was standing backstage watching a show on the air. The representative for the WWF was next to me. The producer of the show was a friend of the interviewer. He came over to me and said the interviewer was going to ask me if wrestling was fake. He told me to stand up, act insulted, kick over the coffee table and scare him. Don't hurt him. I said that we were told not to do anything of that nature in this country. And he said, no, this guy's a good guy. He knows it's going to happen. He's a good friend of mine. It'll be funny. The manager from the agent in charge of the WWF said, Leon, do what they want you to do. I was acting under orders from the producer, not the agent in charge. But when I did what I did, the interviewer was caught off guard and was frightened. The cops were called and I went to jail. I took the heat. But the point is that it was a skit. They wanted to use this thing to increase ratings, but that just wasn't the case.
Which, I mean, fair enough. I wouldn't doubt that that kind of thing would happen, right? Miscommunication. I mean, and
but that's his interpretation. Now, Jim Cornette will always say he was literally our man in Kuwait. Like Vince got the phone call, like, Vader's in jail. And they were, like, trying for days to get him out. They just did. And he was in there for, like, legit, like, 11 days.
Yeah, I mean, he was in jail for a while. But my favorite thing about this segment is that you have the Undertaker, right, in a chair, who was sitting next to Vader. Because were the Undertaker and Vader supposed to face each other at the pay-per-view? Is that why it was Revenge of the Taker? What was Vader supposed to be doing again?
Originally, he was going to be on the pay-per-view, but then that got changed to Mankind right after WrestleMania. So at this point, it was just he was going to be facing Undertaker in Kuwait that night.
Okay. So, but, I mean, regardless, you have the Undertaker sitting there out of character because he looks like Biker Taker here. He has his bandana, he has his sunglasses. Now, my theory going forward, and this cannot be confirmed or denied, I'm fairly convinced that the Undertaker was just asleep, because the Undertaker doesn't move one bit. He doesn't try and stop Vader. He doesn't try and like get in between Vader and the announcer, which you'd think the Undertaker's supposed to be the good guy. Shouldn't he try and break this up? Wouldn't that actually increase the drama between Undertaker and Vader? Did he just, like, not want to be involved in the whole thing at all? Because he's just sitting leaning back in his chair doing nothing.
So I've watched the whole interview, but I think that from what he... Because I'm sure he does talk before this. He does. But during the whole bit with Vader, where Vader is, you know, threatening this poor man.
Right.
I get the vibe that Undertaker's just like, I am not doing a fucking thing here. I am not getting involved. Because if you're in the Middle East, like...
Oh, I mean, I can't necessarily blame him. He didn't want to also go to jail, probably.
But then, you know, we go from this ridiculousness that is this bit. And then it gets to Ken Shamrock. And Ken Shamrock's like, one thing I don't like is a bully, which means that him and JBL must not have got on.
Right.
Ken Shamrock challenges Mike Tyson.
Well, and they've been building up to this. They said that Ken Shamrock would challenge Mike Tyson. They're acting as though this is going to be a thing. And he does, because he says, one thing I've never liked is a bully. You know, Mike Tyson is another bully. He challenges Mike Tyson publicly here. And then he actually mentions, you know, if Tyson thinks his rape charge when he was doing prison time, he's going to do real hard time with Ken Shamrock.
Jeez, is Ken Shamrock going to rape Mike Tyson? Is that essentially what you're saying?
Think so, but I think he's saying that he's going to give him a worse beating than prison would. I'm just not sure that he was supposed to mention the rape charge on television. Maybe he was, I don't know. But
if you were watching this and you're going, right, okay, they're trying to get Tyson in an angle, like, bring it up as rape charge on TV, I don't think I'd be like, well, this guy's going to be on the next WrestleMania. Like,
right?
Props to whoever made that happen. And then I thought you would enjoy at the end where Jerry Lawler tries to talk to Ken Shamrock and Ken says, shut up and enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I did love that quite a bit.
I just think
it's interesting that they're building so much around Ken Shamrock challenging Mike Tyson when clearly Mike Tyson is not involved, nor is he going to be involved.
Yeah,
are they just trying to goad him into getting involved for ratings or something?
Yeah, this was just a ratings thing. And they hoped that maybe the fact that Shamrock was like the world's most dangerous man, they could try and get Tyson to get involved.
But wouldn't Ken Shamrock versus Mike Tyson not even be like that great?
Well, it's one of these, it's one of these weird matches. Yeah, like how would you...
It's like the current, you know, McGregor-Mayweather talk. Like, I don't really think it's going to be that good.
I don't know how you do it.
I have no idea.
But what I did love to see on this show was a street fight in regular clothes.
Well, Wonders yeah, because Steve Austin told Bret Hart to leave his stupid pink tights in the back or whatever, because they look stupid anyway.
So good. So Steve Austin comes out for this street fight, and Bret's there, and then Bulldog and Owen get involved straight away. They're all beating up Austin, when all of a sudden, through the crowd, in his mid-50s Midwestern father gear that he always seems to wear, is Shawn Michaels to
Who
make the save.
Who dresses this man?
32 years old. Shawn Michaels is my age here.
Yeah. He looks way older.
Thank you. And he dresses like my dad. If I ever knew what my dad looked like. And my dad lived in Texas and owned a company where he sold shoes.
Yeah. Like, I feel like my dad doesn't dress as old as Shawn Michaels dresses. And my dad is 57 years old.
But Michaels makes the save here because obviously, you know, 2 weeks ago, he was figure four in a ring post. So he's obviously got shit going on with Bret Hart. He's angry. And
I just find it interesting that Shawn Michaels' knee is apparently just fine because he jumps that barricade. Also, interesting to me is when Austin's like in the ring waiting for Bret Hart, it almost looks like he's taking a nap on the turnbuckle for a good while. And then as soon as Bret Hart's music hits, he pops up and he's ready for action. But it was weird how long they lingered on him. And then was Bret limping when he was coming out to the ring? Because it looked like he was limping. I know he needs surgery legitimately, but...
Yeah, that was why he was limping, because he was legit fucked.
I like the way it played into it, though, because they were like Bret Hart biding his time because it was all a ruse, right? So that the Hart Foundation could come and attack Austin. So Austin never had a chance. Like, he never had a fair chance for the street fight to even get started. Which, to be fair, he should have expected, given that there is a Hart Foundation and it is a street fight, and why wouldn't they get involved?
Exactly. And then, like, Bret obviously has the upper hand at the beginning of the street fight because Bulldog and Owen have roughed Austin up for him. And, you know, he's limping, so you can kind of play that into the storyline. Shawn Michaels can maybe get some advice on what you do when you have a knee injury, which is fulfill your fucking storylines first. Mm-hmm. Bret tries to break Austin's ankle like Austin used to do to people before.
Well, it was a great callback to the Pillman situation, right? Like, he puts his chair right around the ankle, but Austin rolls away, and it was really exciting because it's like, haha, no, you don't get to win.
And then, you know, Austin puts Bret in the sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
kills Bret's knee with the chair too. So I like the fact that he's actually working over Bret's knee and like furthering that story, and then putting him in the sharpshooter, which will make his knee hurt even more, and it all makes sense.
Which is that, you know, Steve Austin has worked since October to get this moment where he finally gets to kind of get one up on Bret Hart fully in the ring with the sharpshooter, his own move. Great poetry. And then
which
we cut back.
He had last night at Revenge of the Taker. He had Bret Hart in the damn sharpshooter, but that stupid Hart Foundation keeps interfering.
Exactly. And then you have Bulldog and Owen trying to help Bret to the back. We cut backstage to Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels just screaming at each other because they're so angry at each other. And like Monsoon's trying to get rid of Austin. He's trying to like calm him down. There's chaos everywhere. No, this is later on.
Because at this point, Bret Hart is just left in the ring right now. He's like rolling around, writhing in pain. He's holding his wrist. His knee could very well be broken.
This is where
Gorilla and Austin are yelling at each other.
Yes, and then Bulldog and Owen end up helping Bret to the back so they can take him to the ambulance.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because they were putting Bret Hart on a stretcher because he needs to be stretchered, right? Because he's injured. And so Bret Hart's like, ow, ow, you're hurting me. Like, ow, it's my leg. So then he decides to get off the stretcher and walk to the back because the EMTs
Because he's a man.
Apparently so. I mean, he gets back on the stretcher pretty soon afterward because he's on the stretcher later to get into the ambulance. But whatever, that was like a nitpicky detail. But Owen and Bulldog are so protective of Bret here. I just love Bulldog going, it's his leg, it's his leg.
And we'll get to the sort of finish that in a second, but this is when it comes up to, you know, the intro for hour two, and you're like, for fuck's sake, so much has happened already. And then we
I
get
swear Austin was going to like eat Gorilla's face off too when they were yelling, because Gorilla's like, what else is going to go on here today? Like, you just get the feeling that Gorilla Monsoon is helpless in the face of all this chaos. Like, all of these dynamic personalities that he has employed and let wrestle in his ring, he just can't control them.
And it's also an interesting time period where most wrestlers who are in the top spot are mentioning Vince McMahon as the owner.
Mm-hmm.
But Gorilla Monsoon is the storyline president trying to keep it all together.
Right.
Now, did you know, Sandra, that in Kuwait, they did the second annual Kuwaiti tournament and Tiger Ali Singh was the victor?
Well, I only knew that because during the Sultan versus Ahmed Johnson, they told me this.
So then they bring Tiger Ali Singh to Raw, and Tiger Ali Singh faces Salvatore Sincere.
Which is weird because I was just thinking about Salvatore Sincere the other day. Like, I'm not lying. I actually was, because so at my store, we sell this brand of chips called Better Made, and on the back, there's this guy who owns the company, and his first name is Salvatore. And so I was like, oh, I'm reading the back of my party mix, and I thought, oh, Salvatore Sincere, we haven't seen him in a really long time. I wonder if he's still employed by WWF. Sure enough, he shows up on this week's Retro Raw. Had no idea who was in the ring across from him until they mentioned his name, even though they had just told me that Tiger Ali Singh won the Kuwaiti Cup, because neither one of them got entrances. And the only reason I knew Salvatore Sincere were because of his weird tights that he has with the slashy white over the pink.
Who would have thought that we would find someone shiter than Salvatore Sincere?
Tiger Ali Singh is so terrible.
Now, I know his dad is Tiger Jeet Singh and all that shit.
See, I don't really know who that is either.
He was like a famous Canadian wrestler of Indian descent, and he was like, you know, famous in the 70s and stuff. So Tiger Ali Singh is like the second generation.
Yeah, and they keep mentioning that. Like, he got his name because of, you know, he's combining it from because of Tiger Jeet Singh and also Muhammad Ali. So, you know, he's playing up the whole generation.
But Tiger Ali Singh is fucking terrible.
He is fucking terrible. To the point where during the match where neither one of them got entrances. And Tiger Ali Singh is supposed to be a big deal, right? Because we saw not one but two press conferences bringing Tiger Ali Singh to the WWF. And also, he just won this Kuwaiti Cup that we didn't see footage of. And not that I'm asking to see footage of it, because, oh boy, am I sure not going to ever watch that. But
we did see footage of it.
We saw footage of it, but I'm saying, like, I don't really want to watch all of the matches.
Oh, you mean you don't want to watch the full two-hour tournament for Retro Raw?
Yeah, no, I sure don't, especially not if Tiger Ali Singh wins. So we get Tiger Ali Singh versus Salvatore Sincere. We also have split-screen footage of Bret Hart being back on the stretcher, because apparently he decided, no, the stretcher is probably the best place for me to be. And he's getting wheeled out, and instead of paying attention to the match, your Kuwaiti Cup winner, right? Like, Tiger Ali Singh, big acquisition. They're treating it like Rocky Maivia, you know, blue chip prospect here, Tiger Ali Singh. Bret makes a point of asking the cameras to go back to Bret Hart. He's like, apologies to Tiger Ali Singh, but we want to stay with this as long as possible. And then the cameras don't cut back to Bret Hart, and Vince McMahon seems legitimately pissed that we actually have to focus on the wrestling in the ring, because, oh boy, does this match not matter.
And then Tiger Ali Singh hits the worst enziguri for a victory that I have ever seen.
Was that an enziguri, or was that a...
It
was an attempt at one. I was like, it's just a kick. I don't even know what kind of kick it is, but it's just over. And oh boy, this was bad. I mean, neither one of them even got entrances, and...
Did you want them to?
Well, no, but... Isn't Tiger Ali Singh supposed to be a big deal? Am I supposed to think that he's a big deal when he gets no entrance and Vince McMahon would rather watch Bret Hart on a stretcher than watch Tiger Ali Singh in the ring? I mean, I would rather watch Bret Hart on a stretcher, to be fair, but shouldn't they at least pretend that Tiger Ali Singh matters if they're trying to make him into something?
I mean, yeah, but he's shit.
He really is. he's quite terrible.
We cut backstage to Bret Hart being put in the ambulance, Bulldog and owner there kind of, you know, trying to help him get in there and all that. And then he gets in the ambulance, and as the ambulance is about to maybe drive away, the driver is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes. Who
jumps in the back and starts beating the shit out of Bret Hart, which is funny because now I can say it to you. It's like, we just watched an attack in the ambulance from Braun Strowman, which completely reminded me of this attack. Because...
So it's funny, you know, because during that Braun Strowman ambulance attack, I tweeted, Braun Strowman and 1997 Stone Cold Steve Austin are kindred spirits. I did not know that this happened at that point. I just thought this is the kind of thing Steve Austin would do, because he's always attacking people. He's always going backstage and like finding people, and he's always involved with vehicles. And it just seemed like the kind of thing Stone Cold Steve Austin would do. Little did I know, he did that. He did exactly that. He attacked Bret Hart on a stretcher in an ambulance. So my question to you, Kenny, does WWE, the same company that presented us with Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Bret Hart back in 1997, does WWE currently in 2017 really expect me to boo Braun Strowman for doing the exact same thing as quote unquote babyface Stone Cold Steve Austin did in 1997?
It's a very fair question. Although... I mean, that would then, maybe the thing that's interesting is that, I mean, the other guy on the side of this is Bret Hart, who people kind of like. The other guy on the side of the Braun Strowman thing is Roman Reigns.
Top babyface, who no one likes.
Top babyface. That's really interesting.
I feel like the parallels are even more.
Yeah, it's interesting you tweeted that, not even knowing that this happens, and you already were like, yeah, Braun and Austin.
Yeah. And also, isn't it even more fascinating to compare the two when, you know, reading backstage news and everything, they don't see Braun Strowman as the top guy right now. But the audience sure seems to see Braun Strowman as the top guy right now. And I think
everybody
it's just
fucking does.
Fascinating. Like, I actually get to talk about Raw this week, so we'll see what happens tonight on Raw. Or I guess currently Raw is happening as we're speaking. I don't know what's going on because I'm not watching it because I'm talking to you. But...
Seen so far is I've seen a tweet with from Michael Farrer, one of our listeners, that said, Raw is 30 seconds in, and I'm already like, okay, where's Emma? With a picture of a cat trimming its nails. What did we do before GIFs? Anyway.
I don't even really know how to use it. Well, I mean, I know how to use GIFs, but I don't know how people choose GIFs so quickly. Like, I just, I can't
I always
think
do, like, you always just do, the one that I use the most is eye roll.
Mm.
So just type eye roll and it'll give you all these people eye rolling. You just scroll down and find the one that you like that affects your mood.
Yeah, my phone's too slow to handle most things anyway, so
that's true. We need to upgrade your phone at some point.
But, I have a Galaxy S3.
Aww.
It still
works.
Do
you have a Master System as well? Steve Austin obviously attacks Bret Hart and all that sort of stuff, and then finally they get Bret Hart in the ambulance, and they get the ambulance away, and then Bulldog and Owen are like, you know, we're not waiting till next week, we're going to get Austin, and they both say very clearly, I'm going to kill him.
Yep. They definitely,
and you know what's funny?
Threaten
it's
murder.
Like, what's funny is that in 2016-17, you know, you hear various things banded about. When Bulldog and Owen Hart talked about, yeah, I'm going to kill Austin, I believed that they wanted to.
Oh, they're pissed. I mean, even, I really love the dynamic with Bulldog and Owen and Brett all being sort of bonded now. Like, I still feel like they all got back together rather quickly after Owen and Brett hated each other for so, so long. And then Brett was like, hey, remember I took you to the bus stop? And Owen was like, my brother. But... I like the fact that now they're definitely a family and they're definitely all sticking up for each other. Like, as Bret Hart was being stretchered to the back, I like that Owen and Bulldog are like hovering over him like annoying family does. Like, I used to work in an ER. Families never know when to go away when their loved ones are hurt. And I mean, fair play. Like, you see a loved one of yours hurt, you want to be there, you want the doctors to do everything they can. But like, usually the family members are kind of just getting in the way. And Owen and Bulldog were being those irritating family members getting in the way and being like, no, his leg is hurt. You need to do something. And, you know, Owen even ends up in a yelling match with Hebner because he's like, this is a bunch of crap. This isn't supposed to happen. You know, he's basically saying that the WWF has caused this to happen to Brett because this has been an unsafe working environment is essentially what he's implying, right? Like, this sort of thing isn't supposed to happen. It was just supposed to be a street fight, which is funny because they're the ones who actually attacked Stone Cold Steve Austin all at once, trying to injure Stone Cold Steve Austin. So really, they're the dickheads in this whole situation, but they're turning it because Brett ended up getting injured. And I really like that heel logic.
I love 1997 sometimes.
I don't think it's 1997 exclusive. I mean, I think stuff like that happens today too. I'm just saying that this particular story is really good.
But I think this story is so multi-layered. I don't think there's any story today or in the last couple of years that's been able to tell a story like that. Like, this story really, if you think about it, has been going since November or October, and it feels like every week there's been progress. And it's all, if you write the whole story down, it all makes sense. Like, I feel like the issue now is more that the stories, while they make sense and all that, they don't seem to have a sort of a, you need to see it every single week.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some weeks where they just kind of, and it's not that the talent isn't as good, because I think the talent's actually better now in terms of,
hands down. I still, this is very good. I still prefer watching today's product to 1997 at this point, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, no, and I knew you, because that's your thing is today's product.
Yeah.
Whereas my thing is both. But I just have, some of the stuff that I watched back is not as good as I remember it to be. But the Brett and Austin stuff is just sensational. But
it is excellent. Not quite as sensational is what we have up next.
Oh, God.
Jesse Fuck Jammies me. Versus Rockabilly.
The rematch from that Revenge of the Taker. Wanted. 10 boring fucking minutes to then see Rockabilly use the shake, rattle, and roll to win.
I mean, okay, so I just don't understand. I just don't understand. So they actually, they call up the footage of Billy Gunn beating up the Honky Tonk Man. And Jerry Lawler is trying to be the voice of reason here, which is probably not a good thing. I say probably. It's never a good sign. And Lawler's like, this made the Honky Tonk Man realize he'd found the right man because Billy Gunn had spunk or something and beat up the Honky Tonk Man. So that made the Honky Tonk Man go, yeah, this is the guy I need to be my protege, so that he can sing, dance, and shake, rattle, and roll. When he neither sings, nor dances, nor shakes, nor rattles, nor rolls, ever. The most he does is twitch. And also, by that logic, why wouldn't the Honky Tonk Man try to convert Jesse Jammies into his protege? Because he actually fucking sings.
I mean, I don't care enough really to get into it.
I'm so angry about the illogic. Like, they're making me watch this though multiple times. They're making me watch Jesse James versus Rockabilly as though it's a thing. They're making me watch Billy Gunn twitch as though he has a bug up his butt. It's quite frustrating that this has to be on my television with Honky Tonk Man on my television as a thing. Like, I knew what the reveal was going to be, right? I knew that Billy Gunn turned into Rockabilly. I knew that it was going to be shite. It's even worse than I expected it to be.
Mel made a comment today on Twitter where she was like, I'm wondering who's worse, Honky Tonk Man or Jerry Lawler? And I'm like,
Honky Tonk
the
Man.
Honky Tonk Man. Easily. It's not even a contest. And then at the end of it, Jerry Lawler said something I could not stop laughing for whatever reason. It was terrible, but I loved it. So Honky Tonk Man hits Jesse James with a guitar and Jerry Lawler just goes, another heirloom!
Yeah. And they keep talking about the heirlooms. I mean, Rockabilly is atrocious. I feel like Rockabilly wrestles worse than Billy Gunn too, because I, you know, Billy Gunn was dull, right? Like, I like Billy Gunn.
You're being kind.
But Billy Gunn was very dull. I think the only reason I really, you know, enjoyed Billy Gunn in any regard is because I think he's a decent wrestler. His kicks remind me of Tyler Breeze. I think there was potential with Billy Gunn. Rockabilly is terrible. Like, he is so bad because he needs to pretend to dance mid-matches. It's just so frustrating that Jesse James is everything the Honky Tonk Man is actually looking for and he chooses fucking Billy Gunn. And now we have this feud because dancing or something, and it, Like, Jesse James, at least, when he dances between moves, I believe him. Like, he's still shit, don't get me wrong. He's not very good. But at least when he dances mid-match, like, I get that he, you know, he's doing his thing. Billy Gunn looks like he has to stop, pause, think about it, and then either twitch his shoulders or do that thing where he points up in the air, points down, and, like, tries to shake a poo out of his bum or something. Like, what is he even doing?
To be continued.
The whole thing just frustrates me.
We cut backstage.
There was a funny line where Lawler talks about having confidence in Rockabilly. He's like, if the Honky Tonk Man has confidence in him, then I do too. And JR goes, what are you, his cousin or something? And Lawler's like, maybe. You can tell he hates being called out on it. Like, he hates it so much. Also, that swinging neck breaker at the end of the match, shite.
The shake, rattle, and roll.
Yeah. He lets go of him halfway through. Jesse James just needs to, like, fall down.
Yeah, terrible.
So bad.
We cut backstage to Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin screaming at each other. And then they go, like, Gorilla Monsoon threatens to take away Steve Austin's wrestler license. I love that. So good. And then, like, he's shouting at Michaels. Michaels like, what are you shouting at me for? And, like, they're screaming at each other. And then, like, Monsoon goes to leave and he's like, I'm going to go and calm this guy down if I can.
And, I like that Austin and Michaels are... Well, I don't really understand why Michaels is so pissed off, necessarily, but I like that Austin and Michaels are just so frustrated, they don't even really know why they're fighting. They're just fighting.
But it makes sense that they don't like each other.
No.
They're not saving each other because they like each other. They're saving each other because it's strength and numbers.
Well, Austin's like, I'm not helping you, I'm hurting them!
And that's great.
Yeah, I do like that.
Mankind cut a promo. I don't really have too much to say about it. Do you have anything to say about it?
Something about not one whimper was heard from Uncle Paul. Not then, not at the burn unit when the scraping began, which was just kind of an image, right? Like, the burn unit is not a pleasant place.
The main thing is to remember is obviously they were still thinking they were doing Sid and Mankind at this point. So...
I mean, I don't really know how this promo really advanced anything other than to say that, yes... Paul Bearer is now disfigured because Mankind says, thanks to Undertaker, he's disfigured like me. It really seems like it's just furthering Undertaker Mankind. Sid's not anywhere near this.
Well, I mean, I think the idea was just to give Mankind something on the show.
To remind you that he's there.
To remind you he's there, and then next week it'll be, you know, it'll be a thing.
Yeah.
Then we have the main event, Undertaker versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Undertaker comes down with a huge bandage on his head.
Mm-hmm.
They wrestle. It's fine. It's your standard Undertaker Hunter Hearst Helmsley match from 1997, which is fine. But
it's
like
fine, Undertaker's but still not in all that exciting.
Yeah, like, Undertaker's still in that period where, like, he's wrestled as the dead guy for so long that, like, he's not really had a great match in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hunter Hearst tells he's not really got to the point where he's having great matches yet. So, you know, it's funny when you look at, like, the psychology and the stuff that they use in, like, WrestleMania 27 or even WrestleMania 17. And you see just, you know, that at this point it's just not there. But in the end... when Undertaker is sort of in control of the match and seems like he's about to, not retain his championship, it wasn't a title match, but just win the match. Mankind comes down with, what would you call it that he had? Fire on it. The blowtorch.
Yes.
He has a blowtorch to try and set the Undertaker on fire.
Yes. Because he comes down the ramp and the blowtorch is lit. And at this point I was like, wait, what? Mankind with a blowtorch? That does not seem safe. But there's a couple things before this. First of all, La Femme Nikita, Kenny, she's going to have problems tonight, no doubt about that. Just like The Undertaker is going to have problems with Hunter Hearst Helmsley as well.
They're very good at getting La Femme Nikita into the storylines. I'm guilty of that.
It makes me so happy. It makes me so happy every time. But also, before we see Mankind with the blowtorch, before that chaos starts happening, you do actually see a shot of Goldust and Marlena in street clothes in the audience, because you see security going over to the audience and, like, kind of conferring with someone, like, something's amiss. And you see street clothes, like, Goldust isn't painted up or anything. He's just a guy in street clothes. And then you see Marlene is just wearing a coat and a hat and sunglasses, but she's still smoking her cigar. So I kind of assume
she's
that
not really. She's not really being inconspicuous.
Not really. Like, if she wants to be hiding, maybe don't be smoking a cigar in the arena where I assume it's no smoking. I mean, I know it's the 90s, but you generally couldn't smoke in arenas. Maybe that's why security went over to them, but she doesn't put out the cigar. Like, she's just still smoking the cigar. But it's after that that we get Mankind with the blowtorch. And, you know, Mankind caused the DQ by hitting the Undertaker with the base of the torch. And then he tries to get it lit.
All the fans chant. It made me laugh so much. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. It makes me laugh kind of. I'm like, are they chanting it at the Undertaker or in support of the Undertaker?
Who knows?
Nobody
who knows,
knows
who they're chanting at?
They just want to chant rest in peace because it's a thing. But Mankind tries to light the blowtorch again, and you can tell he can't get it lit with his little sparky thing. So he finally gets it lit, and like, obviously, I know the reason why he's not trying to light it directly into the Undertaker's face, right? Like, he doesn't want to actually burn and disfigure the Undertaker because that would not be a great day at the office. But it seems kind of funny that he's trying to light it, like, away from the Undertaker's face while purporting to want to burn the Undertaker's face. And then he can't get it lit for a while, so he's, like, fiddling with it for an exceptionally long period of time. Finally gets it lit, but then the Undertaker grabs him by the throat and they brawl, which was pretty cool. Like, Mankind has to drop the blowtorch, and they brawl, and there's chaos going on. But wait, what? China's sort of near the crowd, wondering where Hunter Hearst Helmsley went, because he's just sort of disappeared in all of this chaos. And what happens, Kenny? Marlena chokes China, and it's so good, and I got so excited. She has, like, some sort of leather strap or something, and just wraps it around China's neck and jumps on her. And I'm so into this.
Yeah, it was really good. Because you have, like, Goldust is just, you know, smashing punches into Hunter and just trying to beat the shit out of him. Marlena, you know, because it's like, you imagine that Marlena would know she only has one shot at this.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets this kind of, like, what looked like the, it looked to me like the sort of strap from, like, a purse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she just, like, she looks like she's really giving it to China, and
yeah,
she's not like going, even when China's trying to get it off her, she still keeps
trying sort of to, like, wrap it around her neck, like, no, because Marlena knows she's outmatched. I mean, at the beginning when Hunter Hearst Helmsley and China come out, they say China's so muscular, maybe close to as muscular or nearly the size of Hunter Hearst Helmsley himself. So I mean, they're playing China up as a big monster because she looks like a big monster, and to see little feisty Marlena, you know, jumping on her and choking her and just keep going after her because of everything Marlena's done to or because of everything China's done to Marlena, I'm really into this confrontation. Like, I don't know if there can actually be a payoff, and I really don't want it to be more Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Goldust, because, oh boy, have we seen enough of that. But
and this is when wrestling can be at its best, where, like, months later you get a payoff on the TV show
mm-hmm.
for something that, like, it's just storytelling that kind of adds to the show, I think. When you can, you know, like, we're not going to get Goldust and Hunter on pay-per-view again, but we're going to get a sort of mini little kind of TV feud that gives you a Marlena payback on China for the shit she's done to her. So yeah. I like it.
And I like that Marlena's getting one up on China, even if it is just, like, jumping on her and choking her, because otherwise China just seems too untouchable. Yeah. And they're not playing it off as, like, Marlena's going to beat China in a match or something, because that I would not believe.
And next week we're going to get Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. We'll talk about what happens there at that point.
True.
And Steve Austin's back out to try and take on Bulldog and Owen because he's
It makes
mental.
Me laugh that Stone Cold Steve Austin has two interview segments on this one show and a street fight. Like, they scheduled on this show two interviews with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And it's funny. And it's and then, you know, he's coming in the ring and JR's like, he ain't no role model. You know, so they're painting it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't necessarily model your kids after them or anything. And Austin cuts a promo on Brett. He threatens to batter Vince, and then when he threatens to batter Vince, Lawler on commentary is like, "Go ahead, beat him up. I'll like you again."
Yeah, and Austin's talking about everyone waving their signs. You know, their Stone Cold signs, and Vince McMahon. You know, you with your little dimpled chin wants to get in on the Stone Cold bandwagon more than anyone else, which I thought was interesting. He's like, "Yeah, now you, Vince McMahon, you want to start riding the bandwagon too, even though you've kept me down for so long."
And it baffles me sometimes that, like, WWF or Vince McMahon would allow so many characters to take so many sort of creative choices in their promos that they don't allow the talent to take now. Mm-hmm. And it annoys me because, like, I feel there's so many people in the company today that if they were given just some chance to get over on their own promos, that it would work.
Well, and I mean, what are some of the most memorable promos of recent days, like of the last 5 years? CM Punk, right? CM Punk, yeah. Some of the stuff he was saying to The Rock, or some of the stuff he would say to John Cena, it felt authentic because he felt pissed off. The Miz recently is a great example of it, because a lot of the stuff The Miz is saying, well, on Talking Smack, but even on SmackDown, and I guess Raw now, like, we've only seen him on Raw once, but, you know, some of the stuff he's saying to Cena, some of the stuff now he's saying to Ambrose, it feels authentic. Mm. It feels like a lot of his pent-up frustration, it feels like he's being given creative license to say what he wants. John Cena, when he feels like he's being authentic every once in a while, that's some great stuff. Just getting your standard, I mean, I love Seth Rollins, but a lot of his promos seem very paint-by-numbers, this is what I've been told to say, whatever. I mean, he was better when he was a proper villainous dickhead heel, and he's, you know, recently started to be a better babyface, but it doesn't feel authentic, and so it's harder to connect with. I mean, this feels like Stone Cold Steve Austin being authentic, and the crowd is getting behind it. Like, did you notice the really frightening child that they showed in the crowd with the Undertaker hat and a tear painted on his face, but he's wearing an Austin 316 shirt? And when Austin says that, you know, the Undertaker will have to hand over his belt to Stone Cold Steve Austin, that kid is cheering like crazy, even though he's, like, dressed like the Undertaker halfway. But he's like, yeah. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It's fascinating. And I also think that part of the fun of when you watch these old shows is sometimes people do promos and they just suck and they fail.
Mm-hmm.
But the fun is watching people try.
Yeah.
And how they get. And that's where I think more of that today would be good for guys trying to develop their own voice. Because, like, you would never hear, like, Steve Austin back then talking about, you know, the WWE universe or whatever. You know, no. They were allowed to speak in their own ways, and, like, that is something
Steve Austin can't even remember where the pay-per-view is.
Yeah, Virginia, and then JR's like, May 11th, Richmond.
I know. He says it multiple times. He's like, or wherever the hell that pay-per-view is. Because he can't be bothered with details like that.
Vince McMahon quite rightly brings up Undertaker, and that's when he says, you know, the coldest day in hell line. And then he has this great line where he says, Undertaker, show up with all your little tombstones and creatures of the night, but they most importantly bring that gold belt, because you're going to have to hand it over to Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's where they show that frightening child, right, as Austin's about to say that he won't be a role model and anything like that. But then, wait, what? Owen and Bulldog start attacking Austin during this segment because they're still pissed off because Austin injured Bret Hart.
And then that leads to Shawn Michaels coming down to save the day and run them off. And then, like, Vince McMahon is screaming at somebody off camera to, like, get Austin some help.
Mm-hmm. But no one comes. No one comes to help him. And then, I did not expect this at all, Brian Pillman comes out to attack Austin, which makes so much sense, because who's the one who injured Brian Pillman in the first place? Steve Austin. Who's the one who broke into Brian Pillman's house? Steve Austin. Who's the one, and why did Steve Austin do all of that? What was the reason that he attacked Brian Pillman in the first place? Because Brian Pillman wanted to defend and talk about Bret Hart, who Steve Austin hates. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really good.
And then Pillman tries to put the chair on Austin's ankle to do the same thing to him. And then Shawn Michaels saves the day. And then you're left with it going off the air with, like, so many questions. Bret Hart's in an ambulance. Bulldog and Owen want to kill Austin. Shawn Michaels is trying to make the save. Brian Pillman's back.
It's chaos. And it's glorious chaos. It's chaos in the best possible way, because you just kind of go, like, what even is happening right now? I want to see more of it. I want to see all of this.
Of course.
You know, I want to see them fight. I really, really do. And it's kind of like, is Pillman with the Hart Foundation now? Is that going to be a thing? We shall see, I guess. Pretending I don't know the answer, but...
What do you... Where is your thumb for this particular episode?
Thumbs up on this episode. Like, I think the structuring of it, if you look at it as like, why did they schedule multiple interview segments with Steve Austin? Like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But overall, there's so much chaos going on. And even the stuff that was kind of shit, I liked. I mean, I like Ahmed Johnson versus the Sultan. Tiger Ali Singh versus Salvatore Sincere, not so much. That was kind of the lowest point. But, I mean, Jesse James and Rockabilly are shit, but at least I got to sing the entrance song. So that's enjoyable.
Every Cloud.
Yeah. I mean, I still really do like the song quite a bit, to be honest. And just, I don't know, the Marlena and China stuff I find really intriguing. I like it. I love that Marlena is standing up for herself and being her own woman and, you know, taking things into her own hands. She's not cowering behind Gold Dust, which she would have every right to do. Like, she's tiny and not a trained wrestler, but she's like, no, this woman has insulted me and I am going to jump on her.
It's a pretty good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm a complete thumbs up for this show. This is probably my favorite episode since the, like, full episode since the night after the Royal Rumble.
That was that other crazy chaos episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I do enjoy me some chaos.
Yeah, it's good.
But I think that episode, what I loved about that was it was a thread throughout the show, and this had a thread throughout the show. But not only this, you know, you had things like the Shamrock Vader Tyson thing that was really interesting, the Ahmed Sultan thing that was bonkers. You had the street fight. You had, you know, Marlena and Goldust getting involved with Hunter again. There was so much going on that, you know, even a shite Tiger Ali Singh Salvatore Sincere match and a boring as fuck Rockabilly match couldn't even bring it down for me. So That's kind of the test. So, Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes and patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to hear us talk about Revenge of the Taker, in addition to loads of other stuff that we talk about on Patreon.
So that's it for us. We will be back later on this weekend with the next Retro Raw. Sandra and David are going to be taking the reins on Raw and SmackDown this week because I'm on tour and it's just going to be too difficult for me to find a quiet space in a travel lodge. So, but thank you for everybody's support. I hope to see some of you at the Wade Barrett shows this week. Get your tickets to come be part of it at insidetheropes.co.uk. Cork tomorrow, which is Tuesday, London Wednesday, Manchester Thursday, Glasgow Friday, and then we'll be in Birmingham on Monday with Alberto El Patron. I hope to see some of you there, and I hope you enjoy the week, and I hope that Raw and SmackDown are fun shows, and I will be back for Retro Raw on the weekend.
Yay. Don't worry, David and I can handle it. We've done it before.
Just don't get drunk this time.
I'm not talking about that time. That was different. No, we did.
You were in the same room in Orlando.
We were in the same room in Orlando. It was trouble. But no, we did Raw and SmackDown shows before where I was not drunk and it was fine. We can do that again.
It'll be fun. I will be listening. I always enjoy those episodes not involving me because I get to kind of just listen along with everybody else. So yes. It should be fun. Thanks for listening, everyone. Love you lots. Bye.
Bye.